Hello, and welcome to Breast Cancer Conversations, a podcast brought to you by survivingbreastcancer.org. I am Laura Carfing, breast cancer survivor and founder of survivingbreastcancer.org, a nonprofit organization providing community, education, and resources to empower those diagnosed with breast cancer and their caregivers from day one and beyond. Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of Breast Cancer Conversations. I am so glad you are tuning into this episode because I have such a stellar lineup of guests to share their personal experiences with the Signatera test. You might have heard of Signatera, and I am so thrilled to be able to bring both Shannon and Aaron onto the podcast today to give the patient perspective of how they found out about Signatera, how it is used, and how they're utilizing it to determine their treatment plans. Shannon is living with oligometastatic breast cancer and has taken a very holistic approach to her treatment plan. We also have Aaron, who is on the podcast today, who is living with early stage triple negative breast cancer. So we have great insights, a variety of perspectives, and a lot of great content for you today. Before we dive in, I would love to remind you to hop on over to survivingbreastcancer.org/events. where you can find the full calendar of all of our free programs, support groups, expressive writing, art therapy, yoga, our Encourage and Empower program for those who are newly diagnosed. We have weekly meditations and so much more. So please hop on over to survivingbreastcancer.org/events, and we look forward to seeing you at one of our virtual programs. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Breast Cancer Conversations. I am so excited to have Shannon and Aaron as guests on today's episode, where we are going to hear about their personal diagnosis, being diagnosed with breast cancer, with early stage as well as late stage breast cancer, and their experience with the Signatera test, which I know a lot of you who are listening have had questions, you've emailed, you wanted to know more about it. You wanted to know if it's available, if your doctors can refer to it. And so I'm excited because both Shannon and Aaron have had experience with the Signatera test, and we want to dive into the nitty gritty. So welcome. So glad you're here. So Shannon, can I turn things over to you? Would you like to tell us like where you're calling from and a little bit about when you were initially diagnosed with breast cancer?
Sure. I'm calling in from Waco, Texas. I was initially diagnosed in December of 2020, so a little over 3 years ago. It was my first mammogram that I'd ever had, and it was diagnosed at that time as DCIS, so stage zero. And then I'll kind of quickly summarize. We can go into it more later if we want to, but I went the holistic route, but a year later it developed to stage one. I had some treatments, different treatments done, and then unfortunately, it came back as stage four. So I'm now stage four.
When you had your first mammogram, was it a diagnostic mammogram, or was it just like part of like a routine? Like, okay, now like I'm of the age where I now need to get mammograms.
Yes, it was that. Yeah, just at of the age to start. And it was somewhat impacted, I think, by COVID, because, you know, COVID would have started in March of that year. So I was like, a little bit delayed by 6 months or something, but because I think I was 41.
I was diagnosed at 34 when I found a lump and never had a mammogram before. And so really having to advocate with my doctors to see, can I get in and can I get screened? So my first experience was a diagnostic mammogram. And so that's why I was asking too. A lot of times we're like, oh, it was my first time. And Aaron, I know you were also diagnosed just before your 35th birthday as well. And so tell me a little bit about how you discovered your breast cancer.
I was nursing still because I nursed my second son, some would say too long. so I was involved with my breast tissue, and I had had several clogged ducts before with my first kid. So I felt a lump and I knew that it wasn't a clogged duct, but I never assumed it was cancer. And I was actually experiencing postpartum anxiety with an especially huge fear of germs. And it was January of 2021. So I was pretty scared to go to the doctor because I thought that I would get COVID there. And I finally was like, I mean, I felt the lump in late November 2020. And then I just was like trying to monitor it. Like I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I gotta go in. And anyway, so I had my first mammogram was diagnostic. And also they did the ultrasound as well. And I think they knew it was cancer. I still didn't know, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Did you have any challenges getting in for those types of appointments? I hear so many women actually, unfortunately, discover that they have breast cancer while breastfeeding. And a lot of times hearing it could just be a clogged duct, et cetera. What did you have to advocate for additional support?
I know. I've heard a million stories like that as well. But no, I did not. They were very fast about it. I think they knew.
Yeah.
But no one told me, so didn't know.
I'm glad you had a positive experience, at least to get into a diagnostic screening.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think also what you're mentioning too, and I'll just share for our listeners and for your benefit as well. We were down at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium this past December, and one of the sessions that we attended was on breast cancer and postpartum. And so I do have a podcast coming out on that particular topic as well. And so what I love about meeting women like you all in our communities is like, my brain is like, oh my God, I want to talk about holistic. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about breastfeeding. And so I will be inviting both of you back, I'm sure, for more of these amazing topics and to be part of various panels that we're putting together for 2024. So thank you for sharing that experience. Shannon, what is your treatment looking like these days? Like, bring us up. So you were diagnosed in December of 2020. You're going through all of this in the last couple of years. What is life like for you right now? What type of treatments are you on, or holistic approaches are you taking?
I've been working with an integrative doctor in Atlanta. And so we are continuing some mistletoe treatments that I self-administer. So those are injections 3 times a week. Of a smaller dose. And that is designed to boost the immune system. It also can mitigate effects of other treatments that are more conventional if people are choosing those. And then it can also just sort of, you know, heal, attack the breast cancer cells directly. So it's sort of a trifecta approach. So I'm doing those. I'm on an experimental drug that I brought the paper here to see if there's any way I could possibly pronounce it. I don't think I can, but the short name is TM, but there's compounding pharmacies that will make it, but it's not covered by like traditional insurance because it's experimental. But what it does is it is supposed to help prevent metastases by chelating the copper in the blood. So it removes the copper. And the philosophy, medical science behind that is that copper is required to create additional blood vessels. And so this prevents the existing tumors from growing or, you know, slowing that down, and then from tumor cells from, you know, implanting and creating new tumors. So yeah, that's supposed to help with the metastases. I am now also on tamoxifen, so the hormone blocker. I was really trying not to do that for the first couple of years, but I am on that now. I'm on metformin, so it's sort of an off-label drug, so that the integrative clinic also uses some off-label drugs that have useful purposes for breast cancer. And so, you know, that's just to control blood sugar. Even though my blood sugar was never bad, that's just, you know, we all probably know that sugars feed the cancer. So I'm on that. And then, yeah, just a huge amount of supplements. It'd be probably too hard to go into all of them, but just all kinds that have come through different webinars or classes I've taken, or working with a naturopath. There's just been a lot of good resources, and some, you know, some preliminary research of some of those to kind of narrow down which ones to focus on. So, and then I guess in terms of just sort of non-medicines, I think stage 4 has really helped me focus a lot more on the emotional and spiritual side. So I Yeah, I've been, you know, joining more SBC stuff, you know, different groups, meditation and art and the support groups. I've done a meaning-centered support group recently through my local oncology practice here in Texas. And, you know, do yoga and, you know, just different things, but really trying to kind of be better at being holistic, really taking into account the spiritual and emotional side and not just the body part.
Such a good point to focus on the whole person, and that there's so many ways that we can heal ourselves and support ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally. And I wanted to ask you too, I was reading in your bio when you are living with metastatic breast cancer, you have what is called oligometastatic breast cancer. And so I just wanted to define that for our listeners as well, because, you know, not all, just like all breast cancers are not the same, all metastases are not the same either. So can you just give a quick definition of what oligometastasis is?
Sure. Yeah, it's a pretty new subset that the kind of oncology and medical research world is teasing out. But what they're, and there's not a real standardized definition, but the one I've been using is, it means it's not metastasized to very many distant sites yet. And most researchers are kind of agreeing like five or fewer. So in my case, it's only gone to the hip bone. So I have my primary site in the breast, and then I have several nodes effective, but it's only gone to one site on bone versus, you know, kind of throughout the liver, the brain, or the spine, or something like that. And the reason they're separating that out as a separate definition is they're finding that when it hasn't spread to many sites, that both local and systemic treatments are still valuable. The body can handle and, you know, potentially help heal different tumors by doing, you know, whether that's surgery or whether that's, you know, other kind of targeted radiation, targeted therapies. So not just doing palliative care or just systemic, you know, chemo or natural chemo, but you can do these other things too. So in my case, that's where the radiologists locally, when I did CyberKnife, they were willing to do the radiation, the targeted radiation on my hip, even though I was stage four, because of this kind of subset. And I'm kind of getting in a tangent, but those of you who've worked with radiologists, you know, they always kind of want to be the last resort or something, like they want to be the last ones in line. And so since I had done a lot of unconventional stuff, it was some self-advocacy to say I didn't do a traditional like knife surgery, but I did cryoablation. So I had it, you know, a tumor freezing surgery from a surgeon. So they would count that. And then I've done, I haven't done traditional chemo, but I'm on, you know, experimental drugs and hormone blockers. And I've done lots of nutraceutical natural chemos, basically. So, you know, I was really grateful that they were willing to sort of count those and then allow for this other treatment. But yeah, that, but all to say that those with oligo can probably find surgeons willing to still do surgeries on tumors and, you know, other things like that. Sorry, also one other thing. And also then the prognosis is generally longer, you know, so rather than like a 1 to 3 year average for stage four, it's more in the like 5 to 10 year average prognosis.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you for going into that depth. That's so like helpful for our listeners to know. And just like the more education, the more power and empowered we can feel. And I would also share, just kind of going and running on your tangent too, is even if you are living with metastatic disease, and let's say, you know, you are getting a new met after a CT scan or after a PET scan, and it is isolated to one specific area, there are now options where instead of completely changing your line of treatment and going on to the next line of traditional treatment, people are now asking, can I see the radiologist? And can we just focus on that particular new met that popped up? And that allows patients to stay on their current line of treatment without having to keep advancing to the next, depending on the extent of progression. So I appreciate you, Shannon, bringing that up, because there's a lot happening in the field of, you know, breast cancer and treatments and options and getting more personalized in terms of how we're approaching our diagnosis. So thank you. Erin, I would love to hear your story as well, because, you know, I'm sure in just having two people on the panel, I think this is so great, but we're two very different experiences, right, of like how we're approaching breast cancer and our treatment. So I would just love to hear, you know, you were diagnosed in January of 21. Triple negative is also treated quite differently than if you have hormone receptor positive breast cancer. So tell me a little bit about your experience and the treatments that you were under and how you're doing and what, if anything, are you on now?
That was really interesting. Thank you for sharing that, Shannon. I didn't know that. And I was given chemotherapy first because of the, what is the word? It's like fast growing. Triple negative is known to be fast growing, aggressive, that word. So they just put me on the chemotherapies that were available at the time. And so, but I didn't have any cancer in my lymph nodes. They biopsied several lymph nodes that lit up and they were not cancerous, which was a miracle, I think. And so they gave me Adriamycin Cytoxin, the Red Devil, as a little treat. I had that four times every other week. And then I had Taxol for 12 weeks in a row. And then I had to choose whether I wanted a lumpectomy with radiation or a mastectomy without radiation, which I think I went probably insane in those couple weeks trying to decide that. Like, I just like, I can't, this is the craziest choice. So I ended up going with the mastectomy and I did a double mastectomy and I stayed flat. I got aesthetic flat closure, sort of. I didn't receive what I wanted, so I went back, had a second surgery, which sucked, but I'm glad I did it now because then I got a really awesome tattoo and now I'm happy. yeah. So I did not have radiation because also with triple negative, it's like they're learning more and more. I attend the SABCS as a patient advocate online the last, how many times? Three times, 3 years. Yeah. And so I learned some stuff. I don't catch all of it, but I was doing it for Tiger Lily and like writing, had to write stuff up. Anyway.
Triple negative, hard. Right? Like it's hard to treat. There's not a lot of options, but they're developing more and researching a lot
yeah.
more.
It's like they're learning now that triple negative is maybe like four different things and they're not really sure yet how to know that until after you have chemo and then like how your body responds. If the cancer shrinks or goes away, then they know it was probably this one, you know? So whatever, they're learning more and more, but mine ended up being pathology complete response. So that's like the
incredible.
Best.
That is like really great news.
Best case scenario. It was really good for me mentally. I mean, for anyone it would be, but another thing that happened was that Keytruda, Keynote 522 was approved for early stage triple negative. Like end of July 2021, I finished chemo July 9th, 2021. Mm. So I didn't receive Keytruda. I didn't receive carboplatin because it wasn't in my lymph nodes. So all these things terrified me, you know, that I didn't get all these treatments. But then I ended up getting pathology complete response anyway. So it's kind of like, it doesn't matter.
You know? That's really great. And to add to that, so, and just to share, because I feel like we all have, again, all three of us now have like totally crazy different stories. I started off saying I was, you know, triple positive. And for the first part of my diagnosis, there was a lot of gray. You know, I think when we go in and we're like, prior to cancer, I was like, if you go to the doctors, they're going to give you medicine, you're going to get better. Like, that's just like how it was as a kid, right? Like, they'll go and fix you. And it wasn't until I got a diagnosis that I was like, oh God, this is not necessarily fixable. And they don't actually have all the answers either. And so I was running into all of this like gray, like everything was, you know, 54% this, or like they did, my HER2 was like in the gray zone. Right. And now because of San Antonio and the research, we now know that like HER2 can also have HER2 low, which opens up more treatments for triple negative, et cetera. But like I was in the gray zone. So hearing your story, Erin, I was on the Adriamycin Cytoxin Taxol treatment.
And I had chemotherapy before my surgery as well. So everyone traditionally is like, oh, you must be triple negative. That's what I had too. And I'm like, well, I don't think so, because after those 12 weeks of Taxol, they decided to put me on Herceptin and Perjeta to just in case the HER2 was stronger than what we thought, because it was gray. So I was like, I am on everything. Just, you know, and I'm looking at Shannon, you're probably like, oh my God, you're not on anything natural and you're so toxic to your liver right now. But I actually did not have a complete response to the chemo. So after my surgery, I get the information back that there was not a complete response. And that, unlike your experience, Aaron, was like, what do you mean? Is there still cancer in my body? And, you know, they were able to remove the tumor, but what they were showing is that the chemotherapy did not completely eliminate the tumor cells from the surgery. So I was given Xeloda, also known as capecitabine, which is an oral chemo to take afterwards, just to make sure that, like, if there's anything else out there, we're just making sure we're eliminating it. And then I opted for the lumpectomy plus radiation. So I feel like I'm the most toxic on this call with all of that, just in light of everything that we're talking about. But I'm just sharing this also because there is no linear path. There are so many options. I had to let go of my A type of here's my plan, because the plan is going to change. And we're constantly tweaking and adjusting the plan based on symptoms and side effects and monitoring, et cetera. And so I appreciate both of you sharing your examples of your personal lived experience of how your journey with breast cancer has been and is going. And so this, I think, is a great segue, because not having a complete response to my treatment, you know, we hear a lot of times, you know, there's the statistics, right? And some people love the statistics, some people don't. We're not statistics, we're humans, right? We can fall outside of these categories. But when we're thinking about monitoring recurrence or progression, you know, I remember my doctor telling me, like, you know, some people can have cancer in their body that just lies dormant and will never wake up, and they will never get cancer, right? But there might be, like, cancer cells still sleeping, so to speak, in the body. If you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, for example, there's opportunities for the cancer cells to kind of shed and, again, start being sneaky and going to other parts of the body, whether it's the other breast, whether it's the bones, the liver, the organs, et cetera. And they can stay asleep for years on end too, right? So just because they're, like, out there kind of trying to find their new home doesn't mean that, you know, you have malignancy. But I think as someone who is so anxious about recurrence and the fear of recurrence and understanding what the next steps are, or the fear of progression, where you're constantly living, you know, scan to scan, or every new symptom can make you trigger of, oh gosh, has it spread here? I have a headache now. Oh my gosh, all of these things. We totally get that as a community. And so I'm really curious, because I started researching and hearing about this test called Signatera, which is administered, I believe, by Natera, is the developer of the test. And they can, through a blood test and I think also a tissue sample, create a specialized test to then see through blood work
if there are the circulating DNA
that may be non-detectable through traditional testing or screenings, but then they can see if it's showing up and having an uptick in your bloodstream. Perhaps there's some proactive steps we can take before it goes too far. Now, I am not an oncologist. I'm not a medical professional. This is my Laura Carping, very layman terms, understanding. So please correct me if I'm wrong there, but I would love to just hear your experiences. Maybe Shannon, starting with you, because I know you were taking more of a holistic approach. How did you hear about Signatera, and what prompted you to look into the test? And please feel free to jump in terms of, like, what your understanding of the test was and why it was.
Yeah, thank you. Great. I think you described it really well. That's how I understand it too. I learned about it through my surgeon in Austin that did my cryoablation, so my tumor freezing. And I think that Natera is based out of Austin. So I want to say that might be why he was so familiar with it right away. And so he wanted to pair it with the cryoablation. So he suggested, you know, kind of getting me started ahead of, you know, before the cryoablation, and then kind of monitoring pretty frequently after, and then kind of changing the cadence for monitoring kind of over time. So I think that I'm trying to recall how it all went. It's a little bit foggy in my mind exactly how it worked, but I think they were able to use, they did an early blood test, I think a couple months before my cryoablation, to kind of get a baseline of while there was active cancer. And then I think that they used an earlier biopsy tissue. I don't know that they had to do a new one. I think some people do have to. And so if I'm wrong about my case, I apologize, but I know that, you know, that they try to use existing biopsy tissue rather than forcing you to have another one. So they need to utilize both of those things to create your baseline, to understand the specific kind of genetic makeup of your cancer cells so they can trace it in the blood. So that was done. I think I had my first kind of baseline maybe in March of 2022. And then I had my cryoablation in May 2022. And then we, I think, did about maybe month tests for a bit. I'm trying to see, I have my little test sheet here to kind of remember when they did it. They did it kind of like a month after, and then they did it 2 months after, and then I think they started spacing out to 3 months. So, you know, they can kind of tweak it as they see, you know, necessary, I guess. But
in those month segments, right? So like they're doing blood work for you and testing, and what are they searching for? Like what are they hoping to find or not find?
Yeah. So they're hoping, you know, they're hoping to not find the circulating tumor cells. So, you know, they're hoping not to see that the presence of that in the blood. And, you know, with my early one, so before my cryoablation, it was negative. And then immediately after, it was negative. And maybe I'm going too far into this, but it was about 6 months after my cryoablation that it ticked up. So that's when it was, you know, showing that there was some movement of the cells in the body. Yeah, I keep pausing to see how much you want me to say.
No, this is fascinating. And so, you know, so on one level, it's like, okay, there's an uptick. We can see that it's in the blood and circulating. Then does that change? Did you have to do more testing? Or like what do you do with that information once you have it? How do you and your doctors decide like what the next steps are with the new information?
I already had, so that happened in November that we saw the uptick. And I already had, I think, a follow-up ultrasound in December scheduled, December or January scheduled, because I had elected to just do ultrasounds versus mammograms as my monitoring, partly for the, you know, the radiation issue, but also because I have really dense breast tissue and it's just more helpful. And so I had that already scheduled. So it just kind of gave us a heads up to what then we saw, which is, you know, yes, it's appears to be back, but it was a little hard. So this could be a whole different discussion. It's hard to tell for people who have had cryoablation, because with a tumor freezing, it's creating an egg size. So even though my tumor was only 2 centimeters, it's creating like an egg sized, ice ball, you know, to freeze all to get the margins and everything. And then the body has to kind of digest dead cells over time. So you'll have just sort of this massive lump for a while that will then kind of slowly get eaten down. So it's, I can't tell, you know, I just feel a larger lump. I can't tell if that is the cryo ball or like, because in there somewhere was the tumor, right? So the ultrasound can kind of, you know, see the difference, the different variation of how that image looks, to where he could say, yeah, it looks like, you know, this is, you know, within the cryo ball, it's coming back. So
it's interesting how, you know, we want to know more information and then it's like, what do we do now with it? And some degrees too, I'm sure there's people out there who don't want to know, or, you know, don't necessarily want to know what to do if there's no like direct answer in terms of like, what do we do next? So Erin, I would love to hear, Shannon, did you want to say something in response?
Well, I just realized I didn't fully answer about the what's next. I answered about the scan. So, I mean, we had the next scan. And I think then I also had an MRI, a breast MRI at that time. So that was an addition.
So it triggered more testing.
It triggered more testing. And then based on that, more confirmation from the MRI is when I started looking into other things. So my surgeon was, he said, you know, here's from the surgical standpoint, I could do a lumpectomy or mastectomy, you know, traditional. He could do another cryoablation if I wanted. And I said, like, let me take a look at some other options. So that's when I found the Integrative Clinic in Atlanta and scheduled to spend 6-7 weeks there to do some treatments there. So it did kind of, you know, it triggered additional things that my surgeon could have done. And then it triggered me to kind of research other options as well.
Yeah, and take some action there. Thank you. Erin, same question, right? So how did you first hear about Signatera and what prompted your decision to get the test?
Yeah, it's very hard for me to remember where I heard it. I was trying really hard. I'm assuming it was probably in there's these chats through the TNBC Foundation that I attend on Zoom. And I'm guessing somebody from there said it. That's what I'm guessing. I don't know for sure. And because with triple negative after treatment, there's nothing else really that you could do. You know, just kind of sit there and like, and I have such issue with anxiety and like I already have like issues with my left hip that are really painful, my lower back, my right leg. And so I'm just like, how am I going to know if this is like, you know, and so I really like the idea. And when you talked about statistics, I was thinking of how like statistics for me have changed since I got diagnosed, because like who gets triple negative breast cancer? 10%, right? Of people who are diagnosed with breast cancer, I think is the statistic. But then when you get pathology complete response from treatment, the likelihood of recurrence, the statistic is 10% again. So I'm just like, I know it's low because it could have been 40% if I didn't get PCR, but I did. So then it's 10, but that's what it was in the beginning. So it's just kind of like your mind is like,
right. Like I fell into that bucket in the beginning. So like, am I there again? Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like it's 10% is people. Those are people, you know? And I think when it wasn't you, you didn't think like that. And now you do. So I was like, I don't know if I can just sit here. So if there's another option, you know? And so when I heard of Signatera, I took it to my oncologist who I really like. And she said no.
Okay.
Yeah. And then but she had like reasons and I'm like listening to her. And then I would go home and I'd think about it more than my next appointment. Cause I would go like every 4 months, you know, at first to just like basically talk to her. Like, do you feel any different? No. You know, like, whatever. And so then I talked to her PA, I think it is like the, you know, for me, it goes oncologist, like PA oncologist, you know?
Yeah, back, exactly.
Yep. PA, she was like, very against it. She's like sat with me for like an hour but it was very friendly. Like it was confusing for me because I'm like, I respect authority a lot. So I'm like, she's an authority, you know, but she was like, here's the reasons why it's like really not recommended. And they're mostly about, I'm trying to think, they were like, she didn't think that I would want to be worried, extra worried if the numbers weren't zero, you know? And then that bothered her, like how that would affect my mental health. And then she, like not mine, but any patients basically, because she doesn't really know me. Anyway, then she said, also that all the stuff about how they don't know what to do yet, you know? And this was in 2022, so early 2022 when I asked for it. And so I'm saying that because now, like, as you attend SABCS, you see that they're getting closer. So to knowing more about what to do. So I sat with her for that long conversation, and she convinced me not to do it in that moment. And then I went home, and suddenly like this click happened. I go, wait a second, she's never had cancer. Like, you know, she doesn't know. She just has opinions. They're fine opinions, but this is my life, you know? And so this is my life and you're my care team. So basically I went back the next time and I had my oncologist and I was like, said that. I'm like, I appreciate your concern. I appreciate her concern. But I realized that I'm the one with cancer. You guys have never had cancer and I need to do it. So if you guys can't do it, will you tell me how can I do it? And then she was like, let's do it.
Erin, that is incredible. I mean, to have the perseverance, having gone, it sounds in your story, like 3 times to bring it up. And, you know, I am kind of shaking my head and laughing too. Like, how many times have we walked out of a situation feeling like, okay, I feel good. And then the moment you leave the hospital, you're like, wait, what just happened? Did I get duped? Like, am I confused? Like, what just happened? Right. And so I think that's a great lesson for all of us to know, like, you know, just because you ask once, like, keep asking. And I think the language that you utilized in terms of, okay, this is something I want. I am the patient. I am the person who's been diagnosed. I'm responsible for my own health. If you will not help me get this, can you refer me to, or who should I see to get? I think that is an excellent script that we can all practice and learn from, because I always joke when, like, I'm half naked in a Johnny sitting on the examining table, like, I am not feeling my most empowered. Right. And so, like, how can I share and advocate for myself when, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, we're not oncologists and we want to respect the recommendations. And we also need peace of mind. So whether it's, is the cancer coming back? People can also get the Signatera test if they're on treatments and they're on, whether they're on, you know, immunotherapies or, you know, Shannon, you were mentioning you were on tamoxifen. I'm on tamoxifen as well. I was on letrozole previously with, paired with like a Lupron shot and all those things. And, you know, you just want to, like, is it working? Like, how do I know? Erin, you were mentioning with triple negative, like, you're not on anything. So you're like, okay, am I okay? And then we're on things as like triple positive, and we're like, well, how do I know that's working too? So I think there's a lot of anxiety and questions throughout this entire process. So thank you for bringing us up to speed of getting a yes. Okay. So I feel like this is like the suspense of the podcast. So then what happens?
Yeah, I think I agree with what you're saying too. And I was going to say, I also had this moment of advocacy 2 other times prior. So I'd gotten really strong in that bone of my body. Because with my surgery, I also love my surgeon, not my first surgeon, which is the first story. All of these things are written about somewhere. Honestly, they're all published with, like,
yes, because you're a writer, right? Like, you've been writing a lot about this.
I've written all of these things, but with the surgeon, when she did her version of aesthetic flat closure, then I went to her, said the same thing. I'm like, I appreciate you so much. I think you thought you were doing it, and I just want you to know that's not what this is, and I need someone to do aesthetic flat closure to me. So would you be willing to? And she did. It was so nice. So anyway, that aside, I think, yeah, we need to know what we're okay with, and this is our life, and just remember that, you know. But as far as what happened next, so then I can't remember. I think she made an appointment for me to come back to do the blood test in like a couple weeks, when she finally said yes. And then for me, yeah, it was like they had my tissue sample from maybe the biopsy or probably the surgery, honestly, that would make more sense. And then they did. So the first round where they sent in the blood sample took longer to receive results. So it was like 6 or 8 weeks that I had to wait. And then subsequently, every time you go, so for me, it's like it was every 4 months, and now it's 6 months. That every time you go, they take your blood, they send it in. And for me, I don't know, I think other people get their results faster, but for me, it's like 10 to 14 days, like about 2 weeks. And sometimes I don't receive them and I'm like really upset. So I call and they have them and they send them to me. It's like, I've been waiting. but they've been zero every time. So that's really helpful for me mentally. And then it, like, I keep, sometimes I'm like, what do I do if it's not zero? You know, but I guess
in the waiting phase, right?
And right. I want the information. I want to know, you know, it's like, if I can know something, I want to know, but not everyone's like that. And I think you have to know yourself, you know?
Absolutely. Shannon, is the waiting time similar for you in between like getting the blood test and then getting the results? Is it on average like 10 business days?
That seems about right. And I very rarely just get them either. So I've been calling usually my ordering physician. So it's my cryosurgeon's office. I'll just call the nurse and say, you know, hey, it's been over, you know, a little over a week. Usually about now we see the results. Do you have them? And then she's like, oh yeah, I do. You know, so yeah. So, but I think that's about right, about the 10-day mark.
I am so excited that we're having this discussion for a variety of reasons. I mean, like I said earlier, a lot of people in our communities are starting to ask about Signatera. They're curious about it. We're starting to see more information about it at various conferences, hearing about it. I think, you know, utilizing San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium as an example, you know, oncologists are having these conversations to come to a consensus of what do we do with the information? How do we partner with our patients and patient advocates so that we can move this forward and help, you know, not just the mental health, but hopefully catch
circulating tumor DNA
at the molecular level. I also think what's very interesting is a lot of times, and I don't know, I'm just saying this from anecdotally, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, we're given treatment based on the guidelines for the type of breast cancer that we have, right? If it's in the guidelines, this is what I follow. Sometimes if you're at, you know, a research institution or, you know, somewhere where they're, you know, doing a lot of clinical trials, like you might get other types of treatment that are not necessarily part of the standard of care, if you will. And so I'm wondering, you know, just hearing some of these stories with Signatera being so new, you know, if it's not in the guidelines yet of when we do these tests, and then what do we do once we have the information for these tests? I wonder if that's part of the resistance that as patient advocates, we might be feeling. But that's just a theory on my end. I don't know for a fact.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my understanding is, you know, that it is a very new test. And so like, and probably this is everybody's experience, you know, insurance isn't covering it, but also Natera is not billing patients for it. So they're interested in getting people to get the test. And so I'll see my insurance claim, I'll see it's denied. I'll see, you know, I've talked to the Natera reps a number of times beforehand just to make sure like, okay, this is a massive bill. You're not going to come back and bill me for this, right? You know, and they keep saying no. And if I were to ever have anything come in the mail like that to, you know, to submit like a financial assistance application or something, but they're working out the kinks, I think, in their own test. And that might be why oncologists that are really following the standard of care, you know, where there has to be all this history of whatever before they're willing to do a certain treatment or a certain test, you know, they might just be hesitant because they just want a lot of years of research behind it already. But I mean, the people that I've been working with, because they're more on the cutting, like the cutting edge, I guess, of things, they're willing. I mean, they're willing and interested. So like with my cryosurgeon, since he's doing cryoablation, that also is, you know, just now getting Medicare coverage, but not yet getting like regular insurance coverage, you know, he's already kind of on that edge. And so he was aware of Signatera. He wanted to utilize it. And then with my integrative oncology team in Atlanta, you know, they were aware of it. They wanted to use it. And, you know, what I didn't kind of get to before was that, you know, I saw that uptick, which triggered me to go to the integrative clinic. And then at the integrative clinic, and like since then, I watched things go down since then, right? So then that does, you know, that helps me and it helps them know, okay, you know, the things that we did, the combination of these nutraceuticals and the this therapy and the that thing and the adding the tamoxifen and all that was effective, you know. So that has now I'm back, the last two tests are back in negative. So I had this, you know, uptick, after, you know, 6 months after the cryo, went to the other treatments, added the other, you know, integrative stuff, and then has come back down. So yeah, I think, you know, those who are kind of researchers or research minded are probably very interested in this because they want to tweak and customize their treatments to patients and not just treat everybody like a cog in the wheel and, you know, force you to get a lot more side effects than are necessary. You know, even with like my tamoxifen, the oncologist and my treating doctor at the clinic, the integrative clinic, you know, they said, we're going to start with a half dose because the research is showing that that may be just as effective and really curb you having to have a ton of additional side effects. So, you know, and again, it's like, we were doing so much, it's hard to pinpoint exactly the thing, or maybe it is just the combination of all these things. But yeah, I mean, so that's great. I'm glad to not have had to suffer additional consequences and, you know, all of that medication at a higher dose for no reason, you know? So yeah, so I hope that can be something that other, you know, oncologists and doctors are willing to do so that people don't have to, you know, suffer so much.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you bring up so many great points. And so now you have this instrument, this tool, this Signatera test to monitor and give you the information is what we're doing working. It's helping your care team make decisions. You're allowing yourself to like make tweaks as necessary. And then to parallel that, Aaron, with what you're going through, it keeps coming back zero. So there is no action that needs to be taken at this time, but you have this tool in your back pocket that you can keep monitoring and then know that you can take action if and when necessary. So I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah. And I think just for stage four folks, just so they know, one thing that is a bit confusing to me, and I've been working with my team to kind of understand this, is that I've had these negative tests, but at the same time, I had an ultrasound recently that's showing that my primary site is growing and I have more nodes involved. So that is confusing. You know, like, how would you have a negative Signatera, but your primary site is growing? So what my integrative team, you know, doc said is, you know, cancer spreads two ways, through blood and through the lymph system. So, you know, mine is still spreading through the lymph system, basically, but it's not spreading through the blood right now, is the way he's interpreting that. But, you know, again, that might just be another sort of point of confusion for the medical community as they're trying to understand how to use it, because, you know, that was confusing to me. Like, I'm getting two tests saying two different things, you know, do I celebrate or not? You know, so.
Yeah, I was thinking when you both were talking that I remember hearing something about it also not being like 100% like correct, you know? So like one of the problems is that it could be incorrect. And then, yeah, so that I think that's a deterrent. And then also, but on the flip side for me, like, you know, waiting, like not sure if I'm going to get stage four sometime, which we all think about, you know, it's like, I have heard stories of people who've done Signatera where the, like, as early stage, like me, and then they found micrometastases and then they monitored better and then they found it when it was smaller. And so then you can still get to know evidence of active disease and like live like that for a while. And for me, that like, is a reason to pursue
right.
it.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And one other part I forgot to say, I'm sorry, I keep jumping in, but,
No, I love this conversation. Thank you.
Is, when mine first had the uptick. So after, you know, the 6 months after, and we were seeing the uptick and then that, you know, I already was getting the ultrasound, but that triggered doing the MRI. It also triggered doing a PET scan. So after the MRI was showing that, then that made both the surgeon and my integrative team before I was there say, it, you know, just in case, why don't you do a PET since it's showing the uptick? Let's just see. Like, nobody thought that it would have metastasized. Nobody thought, because it was just so soon after cryoablation. It was so soon in my diagnosis. We just thought it was like just a recurrence of stage one or stage two. So that triggered the PET, which then found the bone met, right? So, so I say it probably really did help. I mean, so if I was going to wait for bone pain or wait for these other things, like who knows kind of how far it could have gotten. So everyone was surprised. I mean, I found out driving to the integrative clinic is when I got the PET results, and I just like had to pull over and just sort of have like a sobbing freak out moment. But yeah, but I mean, like it did help, I think, find, you know, it triggered additional testing that helped find it sooner, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's because that's another fact that my oncologist shared with me one time, is like breast cancer is like the only cancer, maybe. I don't know. This is not like fact, but that they just kind of leave us to like find things, you know, and with other cancers, they check you more often. And so, yeah, that's great that the Signatera test results triggered a scan that you wouldn't have normally been able to get.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Erin. Like, you know, how would I know if it has spread to other parts of my body without doing a PET or CT scan? But they're not going to order one unless I have a symptom, unless something's problematic. And so, yes, it's kind of like this wait and see approach. And then we're looking at the statistics and at what point will it come back? Just waiting for that next shoe to drop. Shannon, I also kind of want to laugh, and you're giving me ideas for future podcasts. Have we all had that moment in the car where we had to pull over and just sob? Okay, first of all, like, I think we need to have that on the show coming up in a future episode. And two other things, and this may sound ignorant, but I, again, if you're newly diagnosed, you don't know any, like all of us on the screen are like experts in our experience and have gained so much knowledge because of everything that we've had to go through. But when I was first diagnosed at stage two, I thought for sure I would have to be stage three before progressing on to four. Or even hearing what you're saying, Shannon, like you're diagnosed at stage zero or stage one, I would think, oh, okay, well, there's still two, three, and four before, or two and three before I get to four. But that's not the case. It can go from initial diagnosis and leapfrog to stage four. So I think that's something I wanted to share because I didn't assume that was the case when I was diagnosed. And then secondly, and I don't know if this is the situation with your particular tumor, but it was also brought to my attention as we're having more conversations with community members that your tumor characteristics and the biology of it can change. So while it might be hormone receptor positive initially, and that's what the test is looking for because they're using your original tumor samples or tissue samples, what if it morphed and changed characteristics and is no longer that? And so I think these are things that are still in question that we don't always have like answers for just yet. I appreciate the patient advocacy work you both are doing and sharing your stories with our community today.
And thank you everyone for listening to our show. I would like to acknowledge that all of the information on our podcast are from personal experiences and are not a substitute for professional medical advice. You should always contact your medical care team. If you're looking for specific topics or would like to be a guest on our show, please feel free to reach out to me. My email is laura@survivingbreastcancer.org. Until next time, keep on thriving.